Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Open your hearts, loosen your butts. It's time for couples therapy.
Yeah, this podcast is Andy and Naomi's, where they can both laugh and hang with all their homies, talking excellent vacationing with brunches and cuddling, to messy situationships and conscious and coupling, from Netflix hookups to single them with some Hulu, text, sex, regrets, or feeling on your new Jubu. They gon' talk about it, ah, yeah, you are invited, ah, needing therapy, I guarantee, baby, we got it.
It's couples therapy.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Couples Therapy. My name is Naomi.
My name is Andy.
And we're a real-life couple.
Real-life couple of comedians.
And on Couples Therapy, we answer a couple of different questions from a couple of different listeners. Andy, can I just tell you, I'm still watching the Cat Williams
section. I was going to say, do you want to address the allegations? Do you want to address the allegations? Now, if you haven't listened to it, it was a wide-ranging three-hour interview.
Yeah.
He did claim you personally... It was not John Hinckley Jr. who shot Ronald Reagan. It was you who shot Ronald Reagan. And I want to know if I'm going to give you a chance to clap back, as they say.
You know what?
Ice Cube has already, you know, addressed some allegations.
Addressing allegations.
Kevin Hart, this is your chance. Did you or did you not shoot Ronald Reagan, as Cat Williams claimed?
You know what? I did not. But I was so honored that he said my last name right. But I said, you know what? Say I did it. Say I did it. Y'all obviously were joking. The man does not know I exist. But yes, he was talking about everybody. And I just find it so delicious. What I love is when someone gives no fucks. So like, I think what's very fun is this person where he's like, I got my money. I have my career. I can say whatever I want. And it's just so fun to watch. It's so funny. And then the interviewer, Shannon Sharp, cracks me up because he just got to a point where he goes, Kat, you adopted 7 kids. Why? And that's like how he asks a question. Like, he just say something he's like looked up or heard, or, you know, the gossip and the grapevine. He goes, yes or no, right or wrong. Why?
That's a little Marin-y.
And I think it's so funny.
Sometimes Marin will go like, so you were in Flowers of the, what is it?
Killers of the Flower Moon.
Flowers of the Killer Moon. You were in Killers of the Flower Moon. Why is that?
It's really sweet, but I don't think we can compare Shannon Sharp and Marc Maron. Okay, we can't. We'll not connect those two people.
Let's get those two guys in a room together.
It was just something. You adopted 7 kids. Why? I just thought that was the funniest thing I'd ever heard.
Who are your guys? Why?
Andy, you said we had a comment. Don't let me keep waxing about Kat.
Sure. I wanted to read this. Now, we got this comment. I just found this in my sitting in my inbox unread because I've been waiting 5 months. This came to us right after the live show, and I'm like, oh, I'll read this in the intro.
Oh my god.
And then forgot about it.
Sure.
And then in my between Christmas and New Year's, you know what, I'm gonna clean out my inbox. Kind of panic.
Kind of panic. Absolutely.
There's way too many unread emails sitting here.
I mean, Gmail's constantly telling me I need to manage my storage, and I said I don't even do anything.
I was like, oh right, I meant to read this in the intro to the live show episode, but I want to read it now. So, okay, this is entitled Live Show Corrections.
Ooh.
Okay. Dear Naomi and Andy, just got home after tonight's live show, and first of all, you're both so wonderful, and it was such a treat to attend, and I love the panel, and only wish we'd heard more from you two.
Yeah, I think so. I share that sentiment. I share that sentiment.
You're so salty. okay. but I'm writing now to attempt to head off at the pass a blip of misinformation that might end up on the episode tonight show. It did.
Well,
so if you remember, we were talking about EMDR,
mm-hmm.
and Shantira, I think, was going through EMDR, and I have done EMDR in the past, and I think Paul was like, isn't that a Scientology thing?
No, so, it's not.
Our listener writes, ahem, EMDR has zero connections or similarity to Scientology.
Absolutely
or any
not.
Similarity
right,
to Scientology.
Right. Had we been able to interject, we might have been able to course correct. Because I was like, this is not right, but it don't seem to be a time for me to get in here, and we on a clock, so let it play out.
Okay, so it was created in 1987 by the late great psychologist / PhD / APA honoree / breast cancer survivor / non-cult member Francine Shapiro.
That's a lot of slashes. That's a lot of slashes for one person.
Yeah, what is this, Friday the 13th?
Go ahead.
The technique has been studied extensively. Its legitimacy and efficacy have been documented for decades in big schmancy science journals. Sorry, that's the first time I've seen schmancy written without fancy before it. So that's why that's why I was thrown a little bit. Although I do like the idea of just saying schmancy now. Big schmancy science journals. It's a vital option for veterans, survivors of abuse, people with severe phobias, OCD, and all forms of PTSD, most notably CPTSD, which is famously difficult to treat. Also, if maybe you have a problem with your parents, it's helpful there, which is my case. It's dear to my heart because it's provided much needed peace of mind after some nightmare experiences that remained unresolved after extensive, also helpful but less targeted, talk therapy. I have no direct connection to Shapiro or the EMDR community if such a group exists. I mostly write for cartoons and had the honor of casting and co-directing Naomi on an Apple show last year.
Oh my goodness!
Excited to do so in the future as well, hoping all the stars align.
Wow!
In any case, I rushed to write this because I'd hate for anyone who might benefit from this type of therapy to understandably recoil at Paul's open-ended, but also understandable, correlation to a creepy-ass soul-crushing cult.
All right. No, I thank you for that. I thank you for chiming in. Wish we could have read that before the episode. You know, you put it out there into the universe. But we've already course corrected, and that's beautiful.
I just want to read this last. You two are the best. Thanks for making this bizarre chapter of human history a lot less terrible. Shelly is totes dead. And I don't know if they want they signed their name, but I don't know if they want it on their show.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
just
yeah. And by Shelly, they do mean Shelly Miscavige. This is just to clarify for everybody. If you don't know who Shelly is, Google it. But that's so funny. I also love how you always make sure you're like, you've got to read the comments, the compliment out loud. Like, even when someone's like written a question, you're always like, say the compliment first. Like, you'll make, whereas like I would cut out the compliment because the compliment is just like personal to me and I've taken it in and appreciate it. And you were like, no, I think everybody should hear the compliment.
I just thought
I want to finish with this compliment.
I just thought it was well written.
No, it was. It was. It was gorgeous. It was gorgeous. And thank you for setting the record straight and reminding us to set the record straight, you know.
By the way,
late than never.
By the way, folks, it does not look good for the butt plugs. I put up a poll. You can vote. Anyone can vote. I put up a poll on the Patreon. It's open to anyone.
But I appreciate this. I'm glad we put up the poll. To me, I don't mind someone not. It doesn't matter if people don't want the butt plug. It's only a problem if I've made 100 of them. You know what I'm saying? Because then you're like, God damn it, I got to move this product. Y'all was acting like you were into it. And this is why, this is something about the internet and as we communicate with each other, you cannot mistake a few vocal people for a large group. And this is what we're doing all the time, you know? People are constantly interpreting information as like, wow, so many people want this thing. It's like, people like it.
It's a fun idea. So
it's a fun, but like it does. The people who've been like, yeah, butt plug. It's like there might only be 7 people who like to post or who like to comment. So it doesn't necessarily mean like there are a lot of people here for the plugs.
If you can vote too, I'll leave it up for a little while longer. Yeah, but yeah, basically, if you want a couples therapy branded butt plug, if you want to see it made, and you
not see
pay
it made,
for it,
you want to own it. Okay, I don't need you looking at it online in existence.
I have to tell you, manufacturing these things is a logistical nightmare. Mimi has been looking into it. For
I can't be done.
Wait, when did you start doing the magnetic thing? What is it called?
TMS.
When did you start that? That was like August? in August.
Yeah, end of July.
Yeah.
Maybe?
So she started looking into it then.
She's been researching for months. Contacting creators, suppliers, sellers.
People have written us to say like, hey, I work in, you know, the creation
shipping.
In shipping. Yeah. I work in creating sex toys, things like that. And it's still just for this podcast, it is logistically difficult to manufacture these things, it seems.
I think it's logistically difficult for anybody. And I think, you know, look, you and I, we can't sit here, brand ourselves as sex neg and sex nooch, and then be like, why don't more people in our listenership want butt plugs? It's like, it all checks out to me. However, there are some members of the CTQC who are like, you know,
the couples therapy quarantine crew.
Maybe we should like adjust. Maybe instead of thinking of it as a butt plug, we could think of it as like a cat toy. I don't know. Is or that an option?
Can you, what if we branded it as a thing to, for like a, to replace spin the bottle?
You yes, spin, you spin the butt plug.
Yeah.
That could be fun.
And then yeah, you just smooch. Fun,
but that's still sex neg for me. That's too much germs.
Well,
communal kissing?
Now.
No, I mean, even before though. Like, I was also like a kid when I was, you know, like, I remember thinking, I used to think, and this was me, you know, going to private school where I'm like, white kids would always like share drinks with each other. And I was like, white people nasty. Like, when I was younger, I was like, what are you doing drinking off of somebody who, like, you don't know?
Is that a t-shirt? Couples therapy. White people nasty.
But that's like what I thought growing up. And then, of course, you would see people as they get older. Oh, you could try this or whatever. It's like, but I still like kind of am not as into it. I'm mm-hmm. not like a sharer like that. Well, before, you know, a pandemic started. So it's just funny. So I don't even know what I'm saying.
It's a you would not
start. How did this start?
So you've never done spin the bottle. So you've never done spin the bottle.
You know what? Don't even edit out the fact that I lost my train of thought. Let it stay in because it's like gotta be real. It's gotta be real. It's like about, so you know, the whole left side of my body be hurting, y'all. So I've taken a sleeping on the other side, but now a few nights of doing that, and now my right side hurting. So the whole body is just a little confused. And so that means, you know, sometimes I be talking and then I just lose a train of thought. And I'll tell you this, I don't want to catch that train. I lose it. I don't want to catch it. I don't want to catch it. I said, forget it.
I don't know if we've talked about this on the main show, but we, hey, here's the thing. I'll set it up and then I'll tell you.
I thought we'd bring it to the Patreon for the.
Well, this is what I'm saying. I can't remember if we've talked about this on the Patreon or this, but basically our bed broke. We have an IKEA bed. We've had it for like 7-8 years.
Yeah, since we moved here. The bed we got when we moved here.
And earlier this year, it just like started to fall. Last year,
had to fix it the first time.
Yeah, last year we were just sleeping on it at like 3 a.m. It just collapsed.
Yeah, it just was like, and then it was like, we were like half up, half down. And like, you know me, y'all, I was like, all right, I just sleep like this tonight. No, and Andy was like, get up, we gotta fix this.
We fixed it. And then earlier this year again, another part of it fell apart.
Yeah.
And to the point where I've been sleeping on the couch because it cannot support both of our...
We are concerned. It cannot hold the weight of two people.
It can't. We're concerned. It absolutely can't. I was just leaning on it to pet Squee the other day, and the part of the front started falling apart.
Yeah. I told you. I go, Andy, you can't lean on the bed. He'll come say goodnight to me, and I go, don't lean. It's, so, you know, it's like casual and cool and good here.
But here's the thing. So we've been like really delaying, like trying to we've been researching beds and then being like, do we really want to go into a store to look at beds? We finally did, and we finally bought a new bed.
We have a bed frame arriving next week, you guys. This is huge. This is, I don't want to say life changing, but whether the bed is perfect or not, it is a step in the right direction that we said, you know what? We shouldn't be living such that Andrew sleeps on the couch every night.
I sleep on the couch, and you have terrible arm pain from sleeping on
it. Literally, it's a headache. It goes down my neck, into my shoulder, all the way down to my thumb.
From sleeping on such an uneven bed.
It is bad. And then I realized, too, my little hips and booty be hurting, side booty, because I sleep on my side, and I can't sleep on my side anymore, but that's the only way I know how to fall asleep. We all know this, right? People who were like, you got to sleep on your back. And I'm like, uh-huh, sure.
We're doing it.
2024. Get it done before end time. That's my plan.
Is that a t-shirt?
No!
You can get t-shirts, by the way. Go to
a lot easier to get a t-shirt than a butt plug. Yeah. And we have two new shirts, honey. Upgraded cotton. Very soft. Two new lovely colors. The Couples Therapy logo, of course.
They look great. One of our listeners sent in a picture. We put it up on the Instagram. It looks amazing.
And the Gotta Miss a Bitch classic, but we've given it a lighter color. So these are two beautiful tees you can get, honey, just in time for Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
You know, I'm trying to, there's some holiday to get something for.
Tubish Vot's coming up soon.
Tubish Vot. Why not, huh?
I don't know. Pick any holiday.
Pick a Arbor Day.
President's Day.
MLK. Give somebody a shirt and say, "Got him is a bitch," and say, "In loving memory of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr."
Yes.
I don't know. Because we miss him. You know what? I'm insane. I think we need to talk about our guest.
Okay. But wait. Go. If you want t-shirts, go to the link tree. You can also go to the Patreon there. You can subscribe. You can go to the poll. You don't have to subscribe to answer the poll.
Patreon, yeah. You don't have to subscribe. You don't have to pay anything to fill out the poll and let us know how you feel about booty plugs. But if you want to join the page, $5 a month, 2 bonus episodes. We just did a Zoom hang in the week between Christmas and New Year's. That was really fun.
Yeah, Ron and Brian stopped by.
Yep. Ask Rana's very own. Rana Glickman and Brian Safi came by. We had really good conversation. We did an unboxing of a very wild tchotchke collection I received as a gift. And I think, too, I don't have a date yet, but, you know, I think I'm going to go back to doing some Zoom shows, doing stand-up online a little more since I don't want to leave the house because I resent people. So I may try to, like, get that up and running, and maybe I'll run it like an actual show so it's like me and 3 or 4 other comedians so it feels a little full, and obviously Patreons would be the first to know about that and
yeah,
come through for that. So anyway, the point is things are happening on Patreon, okay? So patreon.com/couplestherapypod, come through.
Yes. Okay. Now, today's guest, Naomi.
Well, today's guest, I mean, this was a real chance to get in deep, right? Because we knew him in passing socially. I'd been on his show, the one, the only John Lovett, host of the podcast Love It or Leave It on Crooked Media, which he also co-founded, right? But this was our chance to really, like, talk to him, like, for real.
Yeah.
I'd been on his shows, like, I knew him, but it was like, tell us about you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Get into it.
You know, we basically, how we book the show is if we see someone at a party and we're chatting with them and we're like, oh, that person was fun.
Yeah.
We invite them on.
Yeah.
Which is what happened with John. We recorded this. This is one of the last ones we recorded last year.
Yeah.
I think, like, sometime in October.
Yeah, we recorded this back in October, so it's a real time machine moment.
So you won't hear us talk about the Cat Williams interview.
You won't hear me talking about my plans for Kwanzaa.
Right.
You won't hear me talking about my birthday or how much I love Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
So, because you know why, guys? It's October. I think that's our point. But this was a fun one. I feel like he really said...
He really opened up.
He opened up. He was like, what you want? He's like, all right. Well, he's like, we'll get into it. And I think at one point, too, where he's like, I don't know if this is any good. And I'm like, no, this is what we do here. This is what we do on couples therapy.
Yeah. Open heart.
Loose butt.
Roll it. John, I really want to talk about is mathematics, because I found out from reading your Wikipedia article.
Oh, great.
That's what you got your degree in. Even though that's not, the twin pillars of the show, romantic life and therapeutic life. Mm-hmm. However, as someone who was a philosophy professor who went through analytic philosophy, had to have his own share of math under his belt to do logic.
Mm-hmm.
What I want to know. Was that an actual thing you wanted to do? Were you interested in it? Or was it like your parents were like, you got to do something practical? Hey, this is your parents.
That's their voice.
And I'm thanks for getting him on the line. If that was them or you, I don't know. But I loved math. I actually also really liked analytic philosophy because I liked that there's a kind of like brutality to it, in that you're either, with math specifically, you're either right or you're wrong. You can't almost get it, you can't kind of get it. I felt the same way when I was doing philosophy as well, which is that obviously it's more subjective, but you really are trying to make a clean, logical, step-by-step argument. That's what you're doing in math. That's what you're doing in philosophy. And I found that to be very useful in my speechwriting life. And I found it to be a very helpful way of thinking outside of math beyond that. And I just really loved that aspect of it. And just sort of spending time, like, I would sometimes, I think because of a lack of discipline, a lack of motivation, undiagnosed ADHD, whatever you want to call it. I really struggled, especially in college, but I struggled before. I struggle now with taking on huge amounts of reading in order to process something and then figure out an argument to make based on that. What I loved about math is the book could be, the chapter could be 8 pages, but you would have to suffer over those 8 pages. But everything you needed to know was inside of those 8 pages. And once you had unlocked it, once it made sense to you, you had it. There's a video game called Outer Wilds. Do you know Outer Wilds? Do you play games? Are we gamers? We're not gamers.
I play it, Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom.
Great, Switch. And those are unrelated games. But the
exactly. I was like, I'm absolutely not. No, thank you, but go on.
No, but this was a game where all the information you could ever possibly need is there from the moment you start playing. And the way you win the game is by learning more about the world. And math felt like that. It was like everything you could possibly need, you could see in 7 pages or 8 pages, but you're gonna have to spend like a week slowly, methodically unpacking it. That's why I liked math.
Well, okay, what's your follow up?
That says to me I resonate with that. It vibrates on my frequency because I do not do well in gray areas. I mean, look, now through therapy, I thrive in gray areas. I don't, but I did better. Okay, but what that really says to me is that there was something that settled you emotionally or intellectually or spiritually about having a definitive answer that maybe you weren't getting in the other parts of your life, but that's just a conjecture.
I think that's right. It's also why when I did do some philosophy, I really was drawn to Wittgenstein because it had that same kind of rigorous step-by-step, in some cases, explicitly step-by-step explanation of a point. I always think of, I may say this slightly wrong, but it is something like the universe is everything that is the case. And I don't know what it was about that sentence that really resonated with me, but it was this idea of what is the universe? Well, it's just the set of things that exist or that are true or that are the case. And I like that, for whatever reason, that sort of excited me or like sparked something in me that made me want to learn more.
Well, okay. So then my question on the other side of that is sort of like, okay, to me, whereas what you get is a methodology, an approach. These are the facts. We're all living with these facts and we're all coming from the place of those facts. And like, that was the way you were like, do you find intense emotion in yourself or others to be unseemly?
I actually, no.
Okay.
I don't. And I do think that there's nothing more dangerous in this world than specifically a man who believes they are logical but is actually driven by emotion. Mm. And I am such a man.
Oh, no, wait. What?
No, but I do, I that, like, I say all that, and I think that there was some appeal to it, but, like, you know, I also am a very, maybe that's part of what appealed to me about it, but I am emotional, at times manic person. I am not, the failures I've had in my life have often been because the emotional and enthusiasm gone, the discipline and drive and desire to finish the project or see it to its end was not present. And so, like, I have had, like, I feel like so much of what I've been able to do has been bounce between moments of enthusiasm and keep myself from falling between those mesas down into the depths like the coyote by just like not looking down, you know. So no, I'm a I'm a careening emotional wreck.
This is wild because even like, look, because obviously certainly, you know, your work presentation, that's one thing. We all know we're all doing something at work. You know, we're all presenting a bit. But like, also I think of you like, even your when you're on stage, when you are doing the comedy side of things and talking, there is a cool calmness. You don't, to me, convey someone who's like, what's the word? Desperate for the audience, right? Where you're like, I'm going to say these things.
You're not Sam Kinnising.
Or like or doesn't have that like kind of, just the times I've seen you, I'm like, oh, he's chilling. Like he's, you know what I mean? In a like, good way, not in a bad way.
We primarily draw guests from, have we had a fun conversation with someone at a party? We should talk with them on this.
And that's what happened here.
And so
we've met several times though over the years, so I guess I hadn't really crossed the threshold until our most recent
But I think that like here's what I feel maybe there's a way to square the circle, as they say. Here's where I feel like I'm doing my best work, like as a person who synthesizes news and politics, tries to be funny. Like, when am I doing the thing that I feel like I am at my absolute best? And for me, it is when I am like using the logical part of my brain to carefully, precisely articulate a feeling that I feel, because I think other people probably feel it too. And I always feel like I'm doing my best when I am doing that. And then I feel like I get a response from listeners that say, oh, I was really appreciated the way you said that. I hadn't articulated that feeling before. I mean, that's the feeling you have, I think, mm-hmm. like when you read, you know, when you're in the middle of a contentious, dark period of news, as we currently are, you'll have these this swirl of feelings that you're not even articulating, you're not even putting words to. And part of the reason you're not putting words to those feelings is you actually don't exactly have them yet. And then you'll stumble across an op-ed or a tweet or a post or a book or whatever. And then you'll read something where someone had spent the time to think through what they were feeling and precisely and logically lay it out. And it's such a relief to see that written down, because it is lending, it's reversing the direction. Because, you know, look, I think we all walk around pretending like our sophisticated little arguments dictate how we feel about things. Of course, it's the other way around. You know, we have an emotional response. We have a feeling. And then, like, we put this, like, frilly, frilly beautiful bit of fabric around the beast that is our primitive brain and, like, and then send it out into the world as our opinion. And I think sometimes it's such a relief to see somebody logically explain something that captures how you feel.
Yeah.
But where's this manic? Are you just like pushing the emotions down? Like, what do you, to give this logical person, are the emotions like broiling always underneath and you are always this measured person?
How are we managing it? How are you managing it? And I say this, and I ask this question too. You know, this is a question I ask a lot of people who, for me, you know, are cool customers. I think of you as a cool customer. People who do have, to me, give off a controlled, confident energy. And I am a kind of whirling dervish of a human who needs to be, you know, I need active, constant, positive reinforcement to know we're okay. So that's good for Andrew. So, you know, I asked that
to question. Know you're okay in terms of like your relationships with other people.
Yes. And also, like, am I being an okay human? If you're nice to me, that probably means I am. So that's why I'm asking. That's why I'm asking this question. You know, this question is not, you know, it's as much a me question as a question directed towards you.
It's interesting though, because like I would probably say the same thing of you. Like when I think of you as a guest on Love It or Leave It, like you're on the list of people in my mind where I just know, oh, Naomi's gonna be on, I don't have to worry. And the reason I don't have to worry is because I know that I'm gonna have somebody on stage who's obviously very, very smart and very, very funny, but you do something else, which is something like I appreciate so much as a host, which is you're aware, you're sensitive, you're doing your job. There are people who think their job is to be a great guest, which it is. But then there's another level, people whose job it is to make a great show. Mm-hmm. And like, I always feel like when you're on the show, I know that you're being sensitive. I know that I can count on you to see in my eyes that I've got nothing, that I don't have a follow-up. I'm not sure where to go right now. I was thinking about something else. I got distracted, or I went on to another question. And I know that, like, you know, I'm going to fumble the ball, and I know that you're just going to pick it up, and you're going to run it a few yards until I kind of get myself together and you can toss it back to me. And what I take from that is I think of you as being a kind of contained person in command of their own place, confident in their own ego and its demands. Like that you know yourself, and that gives you great power. And I don't see the whirling dervish that you're describing. I see a silliness.
I see it.
But I see it. I'm sure you do. But like, I see a silliness and a zaniness. But it's also a performance of silliness and zaniness on stage from someone who has thought about how to present those qualities. Mm-hmm. And I think I do the same thing, or I do a similar, I do my version of that. But then when I'm not in that mode, and it's funny because that is like, I feel like we've hung out at social events and we've been on stage together, which are two great places to not show absolute fucking true dark, out of control, raptors on the other side of the fence, emotional chaos. True. And like, that's not something either of you have seen. That's not something you're, frankly, I hope you never see it.
So wait, how often does the raptors on the other side of the fence, John, come out?
So I think there's like professional version and private and personal version. Like the professional version is, I think sometimes like I am very intense and I can get frustrated, especially when like we're doing a bunch of shows and we're on the road and like I really thought I want something to be great and I feel like it's not great and I don't know how the words to articulate how to make it great or I felt like we're not, I'm mad at myself for not catching something or thinking of something. And like there's, you know, there's like an old saying, which is like, there's two kinds, like there are mistakes where the door is still open behind you, and there are mistakes where the door is closed behind you. Mm-hmm. And I think it's when I walk through the door and it closes behind me and I realize that I fucked up or that something isn't what I wanted to be. And then I think what I am learning as I get older is like, okay, what are you trying to do in this moment? Do you want other people to feel as bad as you do? Or do you want to fix it or find the best way to make sure it doesn't happen in the future? And I think sometimes, sometimes in my relationships, I have when I'm like upset, I redound to, well, there's no good answer here. So we're all getting down in the muck where I'm at. Like, let's all get, hey, everybody, yep. What are you doing? You want to get miserable? Let's get miserable. I think sometimes that's, like a bad reaction. And
yeah.
I do that in my, you know, but like, that's something, you know, you learn, like, it's like, yeah. Okay, like, and I know it's like, it's like that, it's a, like, that is a trigger for me, you know, just sort of like, and I think it's actually based on like part of our conversation, which is it's because I feel guilty about the times in my life where, because I didn't focus enough or I was a whirling dervish or I was not paying attention or I was lazy or undisciplined or unfocused, that I didn't do my best or I missed an opportunity or I fucked up something. And so that makes me nervous that I'm doing that thing again. And then I get kind of elevated and then I'm in that state and I'm not thinking as clearly as I'd want to, you know? And like, that's something I've kind of had to learn how to, like, how do I stop that? Or how do I in the moment see that that's something that I'm feeling and like, and wait, just wait, just wait, just chill. Let it just chill for a second and let that feeling, that fear feeling or anxiety feeling, let that settle. And that's something I think like that's one example. And then I think sometimes like I think that interacting with people who have, secure attachment feels like interacting with, I don't know, an alien, like a space creature.
Absolutely.
Like, what do you mean we're not going to play games?
Right.
What are we here to do? Are we going on you're just going to respond immediately?
Right. Right.
You had a great time. You'd like to do it again?
Yep.
Okay.
If you guys could see Levitt's expression right now, it is a mood and accurate.
Yeah. What would you describe? Let's go around the horn. John, how would you describe your own? Because your hand, your head is in your hand, almost impishly, but
it's yeah,
impish but weary, but weary,
and that's the brand, and that's the brand, and that's
a weary
the brand.
Imp. Yeah. Wait. Okay. So, are you a therapy person? Have you been in therapy? Are you in therapy?
Oh,
is
yes.
That
okay?
Okay. I'm a therapy.
For how long?
Boy.
When did that start for you?
I've dipped in and out. I went very briefly in college. Didn't take. I wasn't ready. You know, the part of my brain that needed to have the kind of whatever, it was like the wrong cables, you know, like my brain hadn't been updated to the kind of cable where therapy could plug in. So it's like that therapist could have tried a USB-C, they could have tried an HDMI. It wasn't going to plug into my fucking brain. There was nowhere for it to go. It was I had the 12-pin old iPhone up there. This guy had lightning. It was never going to work. But then I did therapy. I had this period. Basically, I realized, like, I graduated from college. I didn't even really think. One piece of advice I try to give, and I don't, not that I have some great perspective that I think is in any way useful, but I definitely think this is something that I wish I had heard when I was younger, which is think less about what you want to be and think more about what you want to be doing. Like, don't imagine, like, oh, you want to go to law school? Is it because you want to call yourself a lawyer, or is it because you want to be a lawyer, right? Like, what do you want to, what is your day going to look like? Imagine the emails. Everybody needs, when they're thinking about their future, they got to think about the kind of emails they're going to get and the kind of emails they're going to have to respond to. But I didn't do that at all. And I think as, like, you know, a classic best little gay boy in the world, I was so focused on these sort of external validation that, like, it wasn't that I didn't like or dislike what I was doing. The thought never occurred to me.
Right.
My experience of the world wasn't something I thought about. Why am I playing the drums? Do I like playing the drums? I didn't even occur to me to question whether or not I liked playing the drums. That wasn't the reason a person does a thing. You do a thing to get to the next thing. Why am I going to this college? It's the best college I can get into. Honestly, why am I studying math? Well, it seems I'm good at it. Mm-hmm. And I did, you know, obviously I think this is a narrative that's too clean. You putting a whole story on the past, but I think stepping back from it, it wasn't until, so I graduate college, I volunteer and intern in politics, I get a job in politics, I very quickly get a speechwriting job, that leads to another speechwriting job. Suddenly, I have this incredible job that I had thought about purely from an ambition point of view, not a desire point of view. I didn't really like writing, but I became this presidential speechwriter, an amazing thing to be. And I don't know that I got as much joy out of it as I should, because it wasn't about that. It was always about the next thing. And suddenly I realized, like, oh, the little part of my brain that imagines the future I want, it's left politics. It's now in comedy. It's now doing other things. And it wasn't until I'm now, like, basically I was 30. I had these incredible career experiences. I'd been a speechwriter. I'd been a presidential speechwriter. I'd created a network TV show, which is an amazing thing to get to do, which I couldn't appreciate at the time. A, because I couldn't have appreciated anything, and B, because it happened for me in the luckiest way a person can have something happen to them. And that gets canceled, and then all of a sudden I'm in a duplex apartment in Los Angeles, slowly depleting the 1600 pen money, and I don't know why I'm there. I don't know what I want to do. And so I hadn't really thought about it. I wrote another pilot, which was fine. I didn't really like doing that. Anyway, I realized that, like, oh, I'm, like, really depressed. Mm-hmm. I'm very depressed, and I don't really care about really anything at this point. I don't know. I have no motivation whatsoever. And so that was the first time I did any kind of therapy. And again, it was another situation where it was, like, the therapist kept trying to plug into my brain, and my brain was like, what are you? You don't fit in here. You don't have access to this.
because I remember saying something to that therapist that was like, it was something along the lines of like, what's the difference? No matter what, it was just sort of like, it was as silly and small and childish and immature a notion as like, what's the difference? We're all going to die anyway. And I remember the therapist saying to me, yes, but you're alive now. And I truly was like, so? And she's like, because your experience right now matters. How you feel about it now, your experience of it, do you enjoy it? Are you having good moments? Like, that can be the goal in and of itself. And it truly, like, at that time, I was like, you're not even making sense to me, lady. Uh-huh. I can't understand what you're talking about. I just am sad because my career is not where I want it to be because my show was canceled. And she's like, oh, boy. Oh, boy. So that was my first experience with therapy. And then I sort of got out of that funk. That period of examination, that period of having, like, basically, I was going so hard without even having a moment to contemplate anything until I turned about 30. And that period of time where things quieted down, I think that was a big moment of like maturation for me.
So how long did you end up sticking with that therapist? Because also too, like when you say that too, it's, you know, that also sounds to me like the depression talking, right? When you go, well, what's the point? We're all going to die.
Yes. Wait, is it a situational depression, like an existential crisis type thing? Or was it also like intersecting with like a biological kind of like chemical thing too?
So here's where what I now, looking back on it, feel, which is I don't think I understood there was another way to be. I think this was an acute and deep. I had an acute and deep kind of depression that got to the point where I needed to address it. There's a name for this phenomenon, which is, so if you live within a mile, if you live a mile from your office, you walk, takes 20 minutes. If you live 2 miles from your office, you bike, takes 10 minutes. Moving further away, turns out, leads to a better outcome. And so I think there are moments where, and the people use that as an analogy for, say, if your job is just okay, you might not quit. But if your job got much worse, you might quit and find an even better one. And so sometimes things have to get worse for things to get better. And for me, things had to get worse so that I could realize things could get better. That's what happened then. And what I've come to see now, as long as we're getting into it, is I was depressed the whole time. I didn't have another way of being. I didn't know there was another way of moving through the world. That's just what being a person was. So of course I wasn't taking joy in any of these pursuits or these achievements or these things that were happening to me. I didn't understand how to find joy in those things. I was living with depression from the time I was probably a kid or like a teen, all the way through my 20s, and honestly all the way through my 30s, because I basically ghosted that therapist, not because I had decided to stop, but because I just didn't respond once, and then I didn't respond again, and then I kept careening through existence. And it wasn't until something similar happened during the pandemic where I got really low again in a way that I actually had to deal with, that I finally addressed it, and I'd finally updated my software to receive therapy in a way that was actually useful. And so basically since, I would say, like, I've been now in therapy, the post 1600 pen funk probably was like maybe 6 months. Now I've been doing it for 2 to 3 years, I guess. And it's really helped. And there's a great essay. It was in Esquire. It's pretentious to say, but whatever, deal with it. It was by F. Scott Fitzgerald, and it's called The Crack Up. It has some racism in it, and that's not my fault. But it has this, basically, he wrote this series of pieces. I guess they've all now been collected into one longer piece, but clearly didn't have the language at the time for clinical, serious, debilitating depression. Clearly has substance abuse issues, But he's describing what amounts to depression in a really interesting way, in part because there were no words for it. Mm-hmm. And he talks about just basically staying in bed all day, ruminating over past failures, moments in his life when he was snubbed by those who were not his better in character or ability, which I think about all the time. And because we all do. And he talked about how he would go to, because he had never done anything very heroic, he would, to fall asleep, he'd imagine being a football star or a war hero. Like all these little things that like kind of the ways he would kind of get through his depression. But then he says, and then I got a little better and I cracked like a plate when I heard the news. and that is sort of what happened to me. Is I got really, it was worse than I realized, in part because that's, I think, the trick depression can play on you. And then I got a little better and I cracked like a plate when I heard the news. And I think it wasn't until post-pandemic, really the last 2 years, where I realized, like, oh, I've been depressed the whole time. Mm-hmm. I was depressed the whole time. And I was in my car listening to music, and music is now the way I kind of check. It's my, like, you know, in the movie Inception where you spin the top to see if you're still asleep? Like, for me, like, in the morning, turning on music in my car, if I can have that moment of, like, what a great day. The music is playing and I'm feeling good. An experience I did not have until I was 40 years old.
Yep.
Like, that is how I check.
Whew.
And I'm like, you're still, I'm like, we're still, hey, we're still cruising.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. Wow. Oh my God. I mean, I feel all this. You know, somebody, I live in depression mode. I'm in it deep now. I tried TMS. It's where they put a magnet on your brain 5 days a week for 7 weeks. Didn't work. So I'm back to being
mad
about it.
We still got another week or two to fight, because it could take about a month after. So you finished it, what, 2 weeks ago?
Yep.
It was, okay, yep. So we got another two. So hold on. In 2 weeks, maybe you can make that pronouncement definitively.
Can you just tell me? What? You have to go somewhere?
Yes.
And it's electromagnets?
Yep.
So they put something around your head, and then they say,
here we go.
Yeah,
it's like on top of it. Yep, and it's like, and you hear like, you feel like a little tit-tit-tit-tit-tit-tit-tit-tit.
How does it feel in the moment?
It is a little uncomfortable, because they are adjusting the levels of it, sort of like how much intensity you can take. I found that when they were on my depression side, like just... It's also too about that perfect placement. Certain placements would really kind of hurt my head. It was really like more. I didn't think it was going to hurt at all. So I was like very thrown and like a little frustrated by the pain I was getting. But you know, that is the worst side effect, is like a bit of a headache. You know, you can get during and after, and it's about 30 minutes.
Hmm. Yeah. Do you see different colors when they turn it on? Like, does it activate?
No. No, nothing. Like, that's the thing. It's so weird. Like, that's the thing. It's like, okay. Like, and that's the thing too. It was such an act of faith, right? Because I'm going in there and I'm like, okay, you put the thing on my head and it felt like a bit of a woodpecker, and I guess it's going to fix it. Like, you know, you'll just kind of trust, and they're like, yep. And it's like, and you're not going to know till it's over. They said a lot of times people will start to see improvement in week 4, but that wasn't the case for me. But they're like, okay, well, we go to the end. And it was like,
and by the end, they're just sweating. They're like, maybe a month afterwards.
Yeah. But I just, everything you're describing, I very much relate to that feeling and what it is to just be going when you're like, oh, I was never enjoying it. Like, but then also for a while didn't know. Because I think another thing for me too, I'm like, well, what does good look like? Right? The whole time I'm doing this, I'm like, what is the change? What am I looking for? Because I actually don't quite know, especially because in some ways, you know, me yelling and being angry all the time makes people laugh. So it's like kind of not bad, you know, sometimes-ish, where I go, is this just the way I look at things? But sometimes I go, is this just the way I look at things?
But see, I don't know. But, well, that's a different matter. Like, it's such a funny, because it sounds like depression brain, even the logic of what you just said, because it's like, you're like, what? I do the same thing, because it's like, well, hold on a second. You feel depressed. You wonder what it would be like to not be depressed, but you also worry that not being depressed might make it so that you don't have some of these parts of yourself that you like. But you wouldn't be depressed which would mean it would be worth the trade-off because you wouldn't be depressed, which presumably would be a better way to live than being depressed while having these qualities that are in some way beneficial, but you can't appreciate what it would be like to be without those qualities because you're depressed. You know what I mean?
Well, okay, Dr. Lovett. Okay, you'll get your copay.
I'm just thinking about it. Well, I do the same exact thing. I mean, like, I think there are those studies that show, like, some huge percentage of people believe that they're above average drivers, and which obviously can't be true.
Especially not in Los Angeles.
And, but... But there are also those studies that look at self-evaluation, and it is unfortunate but also true that depressed people have a more accurate understanding of their own abilities. And you can see how, look, in a group of people, some of them throw out everything that comes through their front door. Some of them are hoarders. Some people are, you know, there's different levels of sexuality, there's different levels of different ways of expressing gender. There would surely be different, like, that, like, there's some advantage, like, of course there's people that come at the world in a more pessimistic way and some people who naturally come at the world in a more optimistic way, and there's clearly value in both of those ways of seeing the world.
Yeah.
Okay, so, but now that you're doing therapy, like, has this changed dramatically? Or is it just that you have a better understanding of where you were, that you're like, oh, I've been depressed the entire time?
So I think I think that a few things, I think it's a little bit overdetermined. So I don't know which variable deserves the credit. I think therapy is a big part of it. Also, I think I was relying on edibles, like, too much. Mm-hmm. And especially during the pandemic, it got to the point where I would basically, like, have one before dinner and then have one after dinner so that I was stoned when I was asleep, which meant basically I was stoned in a little bit in the morning and basically every night and every weekend. And I think it was a way for me to mitigate the depression I was clearly in and also just avoid facing certain feelings that I didn't want to face on a bunch of different levels. And so I really, at this point, I have no idea. It was a virtuous circle. So the pandemic started unclenching and we started being able to, like, go to restaurants and go out a bit more and go to just see the world a bit more. There were those months between the vaccine and the realization that there were breakthroughs where we were all kind of like,
yep.
Yeah.
It was a fun summer.
Our last fun summer.
Yeah.
And yeah. I think that really helped. I think I started feeling better, maybe just because of circumstance, which led me to start cutting back on how many edibles I was taking, which I think helped improve my mood. I started talking to this therapist. I started, I think, being less stoned, which I find for me, I think one of the ways in which, like, alcohol is obviously a more dangerous drug than marijuana, but marijuana in its own way can be very dangerous, not in the sense, not in the ways it causes these sort of, like, in a more subtle way. And in one way, for me, I think what marijuana does is it makes you and your life separate. Hmm. That you're inside of your life and you're worried about it and you're anxious about it. But if you take an edible, all of a sudden you're over here and your life is over here. And you can look at it and go, like, boy, there's some problems you're going to have to deal with tomorrow. But thank God that's not us right now. We're over here. Your life's over there. And if you do that, and so there's an email you need to respond to. There's a problem in your relationship. There's an anxiety or jealousy or fear that you have not been dealing with. All of it, you can just kick it to tomorrow. But if you take edibles every single day, you kick it every single day to the next day, and they just pile up and you never address them. And so I think I started realizing that there were all these aspects of my life that I was not
happy in and I needed to address, and I started addressing them. Mm-hmm. And so I think therapy helped me do that. Cutting the edibles, the kind of the slow reopening of this is all of life, like all of that kind of started feeding each other and was this led to this moment where all of a sudden I felt different than I had felt maybe ever.
Mm-hmm.
And that gave me a confidence that allowed me to be open to other changes that needed to happen.
Right. Right, 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 right. Okay, Andy, I think we done got the backstory, sis. We done got the backstory. We have borne witness. We have heard of a transformation now.
Yeah.
John, are you ready to answer some people's questions? Because you know people come to us now. And they need, and you know, this is why we ask you these questions. It's in part, it's like, let people need to know where you're at, right? When you come in giving them the what for.
Yeah. Is this okay? Is this a good episode?
I think so.
Yeah. What, are you worried?
I know, because I said, I hope he don't backpedal and get worried. Because I said, this is what the people, especially our listeners, they appreciate. Again, we say open heart, loose butt. You know what I mean? And that's the assignment.
Hey, and I'm all, listen, I came here to open hearts and loosen butts, and I'm all out of butts. Or something.
There it is.
All right. We'll be right back after this.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself
and for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
And we're back with John Lovett here to help you handle your scandal. We just yelled at his ear. I know Lovett didn't like it, but you know what? He needed that. Wait, needed that jolt.
One question. John, did he date in high school at all?
No.
Okay.
Yeah. Right.
No.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You're a good kid, and you were focused on being the best of the good kids.
I just wanted to, like, what was Long Island like? I just know my family, some of them are from Huntington, so I don't really know. But what was your Long Island?
To me, Long Island is the physical manifestation of the idea that we didn't come here to make friends, we came here to win.
Wow.
I'm obsessed.
Just saying that, by the way, that explains the next, you know, 40 years of your journey up until,
I think,
like,
so.
Why am I depressed?
Yeah.
Where you're like, yeah, I'm supposed to do it. And also, too, when you talk about things that you just did, too, it's like, you also did the things that you were good at. Like, that's part of it. You were like, I'm good at it, so I'm supposed to do it.
Yeah, I
like,
get
you
that.
Go, uh-huh. Yeah.
Well, look, I'm very lucky. Look, I was, like, I have had, I think part of why I pursued these things is when I did, I was like rewarded for it. People were like,
yep,
oh, you're really good at this. That's cool.
Yeah.
I love that feeling. I still love that feeling. Mm-hmm. So if, like, you know, if I hadn't had these sort of opportunities, I would have figured this shit out a while ago.
Right.
No, I call them the pats on the head. And I got the pats on the head from my parents and from my teachers when I was younger.
Yeah.
And now I'm looking for them from, I guess, producers and executives. So they're not.
Which is sick. They'll never give you that.
It's not the same thing. It's not the same thing. Winning my science fair in ninth grade is not the same feeling as, hey, we don't have a lot of notes on this script. Like, no, it's not the...
It doesn't fill the void.
Like, yeah, it's not filling the void. No.
No.
We get questions from all over. We get them from Instagram, from Twitter, from Gmail. Voicemail is, of course, our favorite. Naomi, what is that number?
323-524-7839. Come on through. I like to hear where you're at emotionally. It clarifies things when you leave a voicemail.
Well, John, I'm going to give you a choice. We can either start with something easy or we can start with something a little more difficult. What's your choice?
How many are we going to do?
Well, it depends on how much time you have. We have.
We like to do at least two.
Two, but it's your call.
Here's my feeling. I want to end easy, but I'm happy to start easy. But I think we need to. The most important thing is we should end easy.
Great.
Let's have some fun before we hit the road. I leave the rest up to you.
Let's
start with here. This is a voicemail.
Hi, Naomi and Andy. My name is also Andy. Sorry, I'm a little bit nervous because I love your show and I love you guys. So I'm calling to discuss a quote-unquote friendship that I've been in for a few years now with someone I will call Eric. He is a very destructive person. He has a lot of bad habits that I don't enjoy. He has a tendency to talk at you, not to you, for one. He does not respect anyone's time, really. He does this to me and a few other common friends. Messages us, like, I'm not kidding, dozens of times per day via text, via phone calls randomly at as late as 3 a.m., sometimes for as, like, minor things as discussing a short film that he saw. And none of this is really the negative. Well, that is negative. But I feel like the worst part is that I don't feel anything in common with Eric. I am getting the feeling that I'm only friends with this person because I pity them. And this sounds bad, but, you know, Eric is someone who came from an abusive childhood, a very, like, conflict-heavy home. He has a lot of very serious mental health issues. He has committed acts of self-harm in the 5 years that I've known him. And so I think you may see where this is going. The only reason I feel like I stay in touch with this person and respond to their several messages per day and occasional phone calls is that I don't want to be responsible for their declining mental health, because I know that they, at least they claim that they care about me, even though they don't illustrate behavior, reflecting that. But I, I'm just sort of nervous about how this could possibly go. What do I do in an instance like this? You know, I don't feel like Eric actually really even knows me that well, because we only talk about him and his mental health and his needs. And while he is really unaware of mine and considerate of mine, I don't enjoy this person. What do I do? How do I proceed? And should I feel guilty? You know, it's sort of a hashtag. Am I the asshole? Should I feel guilty about ending this friendship? Anyway, would love to hear both your thoughts, and I love the sense. Bye. Oh, and bye to a team death.
That's all right. Thorny moral situation, I suppose.
Well,
right?
I'm not sure. Love it. First thoughts.
I think Dear Caller gives away the game a little bit by saying at the end, do I need to feel guilty? Which is a silly question to ask, because A, you recorded the message in such a way that leaves us to want to say, of course you need to set a boundary. Of course it is not your job to be this person's everything or available in these ways. Like, of course, and you know that. You know that in how you left the message. Mm-hmm. So you really know already that you should be able to set a boundary. Like, I don't, like, just even the language in that call is someone who has thought about boundaries and what he's getting and not giving and all the rest. So my first reaction is, like, What are you really asking? Because you seem to already know, you seem to want to hear someone confirm that you can disentangle yourself from this person without feeling guilty for what comes next. However, that is not permission that other people can give you.
especially with this little information. And so what I am left wondering is less, what does this person do now, though that's obviously important, and more, how did it get to the point where this relationship with someone you claim doesn't even know you has so few boundaries with you?
Okay, that's...
It is interesting. Former guest Emily V. Gordon, former therapist, now Hollywood writer and producer,
and
said that sometimes when she was a therapist, people would come to her for absolution. That's what they wanted. They wanted just permission to do this thing.
Right.
And that it was okay. And that seems like, because I didn't catch that, but when you said, but you saying that, like, they asked, should I feel guilty? Not, I do feel guilty, but should I feel guilty over this? That to me is like, hey, just tell me that it's okay for me to, like, drop this bum.
Yeah.
And not have to deal with the repercussions in some way.
But at the same time, when we say deal with repercussions, I think this is
the guilt over what if this person. So what if something happens to this person and now I'm going to feel guilty because
you're going to feel it, but it's not going to be your fault.
True.
But that doesn't matter.
OK, tell
that me. Doesn't matter to me. Like here's what I think when I hear that, which is like, OK, clearly you are worried that this person is in some kind of bad shape. And you're worried that if you aren't available the way they need you to be available right now, that somehow you will contribute to an awful outcome of some kind or another. That is a kind of whatever fear that you have.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It seems like you have that fear because you have a legitimate concern for this person. But not so much of a concern that you're willing to entertain what it would be like to figure out how to set the boundaries that are good enough for you to find a way to have this person in your life. Now, I don't know if that's the right thing to do or not, because there's not enough information here,
of course. You haven't said if you've tried, right.
But that's, to me, why I come back to, how did this get to this place? Because we don't... from this other person, Eric's point of view, Eric seems to have these kind of... You know, I believe Andy mentioned having other friends with whom this person does the same kind of thing. So this person... There are people that, for reasons that are sad... maybe didn't learn exactly the right level for how to engage with friends in a way that is not burning too hot and quick, you know?
Yeah.
And so, like, what do we owe someone who's not respecting a boundary that hasn't been set? I think you owe a little something. Now, maybe it's not worth it, and maybe there's other details that we don't have, but it doesn't sound like Andy has had any kind of conversation with this person, Eric, about the ways in which this kind of friendship is not working for them.
Right. Right.
So I don't know.
No, I agree with that. I understand what you're saying. Cause I think, you know, my impulse was definitely like, you know, you've got to say, hey, like, I mean, I don't even must. It's like, where it's like, hey dude, you can't call me after 11 PM or like, hey, I'm not available at these times. Because I guess what I wonder is, in these moments when you're saying, oh, he texts a lot and then calls, when you don't engage, are you getting pushback? You know what I mean? Like, is this a person who's coming at you being like, where are you? Or fuck you then? Or you're not helping me?
Right. And like, because there's some people whose attitude is, I'll call. Your phone's not on do not disturb. Maybe you're around. Maybe you're not. If you don't want to answer, don't answer. If you don't want to hear the ring, put it on silent. You don't have to text. I have friends that are texting back and forth all day. The text will pile up. You get to them later, if at all. That's called love. That's called love in this modern era.
That's very true. Andy's definitely like a few day Andy Beckerman host, not Andy. This
yes,
caller.
I will.
Yeah, he will not.
I'll save up all my texts, and then one morning, I'll sit there and I'll answer all of them. I'll answer all of my DMs on Instagram, and then I'm like, okay, good. Because it's just too much to like if I'm in the middle, I'm doing like a million things a day. I can't just stop writing or doing chores or whatever to answer a text right then.
It's texting. There is only two moments in which it is appropriate to respond to a text, now or never. And it is a frustrating medium for that reason.
Yep.
It demands you. There's no keeping up.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh my God. Well, that brings us into another question, but
yeah, but like
this for Andy, I would say I agree with love.
Andy, the caller.
Yes.
You're not talking to me.
No, you're doing great, sweetie.
Thank you.
Just keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you. Fill in that void, please.
But I was like, I'm like, yes, this is somebody you've been friends with for 5 years, and I can hear in your voice, like, this is a question, it's like, do you care about them, or is it one of those things where it's like, you don't want to be mean?
Oh.
And those are two very different things. Yeah. A lot of times, like, are you just like, I don't want anybody to be mad at me? That's different.
Right. That's why when the question is, you know, basically about feeling guilty, it's like, that's a response. That's how do I stop myself from feeling something in response to a response to my actions?
Right.
Which is a lot of steps to go before we've got to how you got there and what you could do to change it.
That's true.
You shouldn't feel guilty for, like, if you do actively do something to hurt someone, or even absent-mindedly.
Right. Negligence.
Through negligence, you hurt someone. Yeah, sure. There's where the feeling of guilt is useful for correcting your behavior. And obviously more people in our culture should be feeling that than they are. However, this seems to me, and especially for someone who's not a good friend, like, again, I think the caller is just trying to, like, please absolve me so that when I start ghosting this person,
right,
if something bad happens, I can be like, well, you know, Andy, Naomi, and John said it was okay, so I guess I'm cool.
Also, I'll never tell you to ghost somebody. I mean, I think, again, it's because I think, again, what Lovett said, there's a middle ground to this where it's like, have you had a conversation where you set your boundaries for how to make this a pleasant friendship? Or even saying, when Eric is yammering on, do you want to know how my day was? Do you know what I mean? Like, you could totally, like, make it a joke or call it out in that moment and course correct. And then if you don't get the response you want, then it's like, hey, yeah, I'm not available, you know, wishing you well. And it's like, kind of leave it at that. And then you're done. I don't know. Let's get to the next question.
All right.
Because
all right.
John Lovett has places to be, honey.
All right. This one, Naomi, do you want to read? This is from Hollis from Instagram direct message. This is a...
Okay.
We asked our audience for some more fun ones.
Okay.
Or some...
Well, light, but listen. Okay.
Light.
Hey, Andy, Naomi, and illustrious guest. Ain't that the truth? Illustrious. Love the pod. You requested lighter questions, so here's one for you. My name is Hollis, and I use they, them pronouns. We needed some lighter ones because we could be in thorny situations all the time.
Yeah.
And so we had to put out a call. Say, guys, come on. We're unlicensed. We can't handle the heaviest of the heavy at every turn. Okay. Here's the question. When and how should I leave the group chat? Okay, we love a log line. Here's the context. Almost exactly 1 year ago, I moved from Alabama to the Twin Cities for reasons I'm sure are obvious. Cough, cough, white Christian nationalist fascism is scary when you're trans in the South. Cough, cough. But we're keeping this light, right? Hollis, thank you. I moved by myself, leaving behind family and a big group of friends. Said group of friends all engage in a ridiculously large group chat. I still check in every few weeks to see what's been happening, but I'm less and less interested as time passes, and sometimes it just gives me major FOMO. The chat is muted, but I still see the notifications that things are happening when I open the app to chat with others. I'm still in regular contact with a handful of these friends, aka the ones that matter, through smaller group chats and occasional phone calls. I'm incredibly happy with where I've ended up. I'm in a better place mentally and emotionally, and I'm committed to my new home. After a year, I'm ready to leave the group chat and just keep in contact with the ones that matter. But I can't help feeling like it'll be seen as an FU to some people in the big chat. Okay, multiple chats. Or at the very least, I should say something before I close the door on all that. I'm also open to suggestions or the funniest thing I could say right before I leave the chat. I don't know, but I'd love to hear your thoughts. Thanks for all y'all do. Help me make it through my first Minnesota winter with my sanity intact.
Oof.
Well, you know, I detest a group chat.
Oh my God. When someone texts both of us at the same time, Naomi loses it.
I'm side texting.
And then just text that person.
On
their own.
By the way, that I hope they zap that out of your brain because that sucks.
What? But if it's like, if you're texting me and Andy, it's like, but that is Andy so
annoying. Yeah, that is so annoying. Let me tell you why.
Tell me.
Especially because sometimes, so if somebody has texted you two as a unit,
yes,
which is what you are, at least I thought until I joined today. Even if it's logistical, you're absolutely unequivocally in the wrong, because there is nothing more frustrating to the other person in the chat for someone to say, yes, we'll be there at 8 on a side chat. But even if it is emotional, I believe that in a group chat in which there is a couple, and I'm not, the listeners know you're a couple.
Yes, they're aware.
I'm not crossing a boundary.
No. We're public about it now.
You're public. You've gone public about it. You've broken the velvet closet or whatever.
Yeah. We put it in deadline.
You put it in deadline. Let's say somebody, like, if you are on a group text with a friend, and Andy says, "Happy birthday, we love you," to that friend, that's from you too.
Yes,
that's
absolutely
a message from you as well.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I'm on board.
So what's the part that you're...
if someone sends us both information, and not logistics. I think logistics, of course, you stay on the same thing, so you've seen the same information and you're on the same page. But if it's like someone's going to like generate a conversation and we're friends, I want to have a conversation with you now. Like, we're kind of now starting a text thread. Mm-hmm. And you don't need to hear every thought in my damn head all the time.
Okay.
So it's to save me?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like, we talked all the time. We're in the house together all the time. I can't even have some texts that you don't see. Good Lord.
Right. But what if he wanted to have... So let's say someone texts the two of you, "Hey, have you seen this film Barbie?" And Naomi, you want to talk about Barbie. And so you side chat and you start a Barbie conversation. But Andy thinks that Andy replies all, "Yeah, loved it." Now, maybe Andy would have had a great time having a chit-chat about Barbie, but you've chosen for him that he can't be a part of it, even though the friend who initiated the conversation welcomed Andy to be part of it because it was a group chat. That's what I don't understand.
Yeah, shame her. Do it.
But I get it. I'm being ornery. I'm being persnickety.
Yep.
I'm being combative.
You know what? I'll take it because no one said anything to me, but that doesn't mean that they don't have problems with it. I think it's just for me because I feel like we are so enmeshed in so many ways that, like, I'm like, because if you ask me about Barbie, Andy already know what I think about Barbie. He don't now need to read a bunch of texts with me yelling about Barbie.
You're rebelling. You've put me in the place of your parent because we are enmeshed so much. That
now we're getting to the real stuff.
That you are trying to refind your identity as a single person, as a singular person, as yourself. And in doing that, you're pushing back against me, which I get. I see it. We are in the house a lot together.
I think this is a great place to pick up next week.
Wait, quick.
I think we're really getting, I just don't want us to forget. This is where I want to start next week because I think we're getting to some good stuff here.
Now, quickly though, how should Hollis exit this massive group chat?
I think Hollis's instinct is a good one. So I think there's two possibilities. I think both have their merits. I think one would just be to, I think it is important if you're going to leave a big group chat to not do it in the midst of a kind of a storm of talking, because it looks like you're leaving because of it. Mm-hmm. I think like it's always nice to wait for a lull of a few days even, as if the chat has run its course and then French exit, as it were.
Oh, okay.
But that is one option. But what I actually appreciate Hollis's concern that they are going to send a message they don't want to send. And I actually think it is very sweet that the reason is FOMO. Mm-hmm. And so I think it would be a totally fine thing to say to that group chat, "Hey, everybody, Hollis here. Love you all. I so enjoy keeping up with everybody, but this group chat gives me too much FOMO. So I'm going to step out of it, but you will always, but it's only because I miss you too much. Tell people my story. Tell people I love to laugh. Get out."
Okay. Wow. Speechwriter.
Wow.
Love it said, "Let me write the speech." Love it said, I can't stop. No matter what. Hollis, you got lucky we had Love it for this question, because I would have said, "Get out immediately," during a storm. I would have been like, "Tell them you're done with this."
"This was offensive. I'm gone."
Exactly. No, like,
you know what chats To me, some of the chats that have been in my life been the hardest to extricate from have been ad hoc groups that have formed around like bachelor parties or bachelorette weekends or wedding groups or like you're with, you know, it's like two groups that haven't traveled together or traveling together. A group chat starts a private joke, an inside joke develops, and then someone on the chat calls it back months later and everyone's laughing about that old joke about the can of soup because they saw the same can of soup. And I just like, get me the fuck out of this.
Yes.
I am out. I say no thank you to this.
Absolutely.
I didn't laugh the first time.
Well, we had like a family. There's like a family group chat that sort of I got into around our wedding, like my extended family. And it was around me and Andy's wedding, obviously, as people were talking about traveling. And then like, but then my mom was like, you don't want to be in the chat, do you? I go, no, because I keep seeing stuff. And then I'm not involved. I don't know what that conversation is. But then also the little kids are in the chat. There's like an 11-year-old. An 11-year-old in the family chat. I said, I'm not talking to an 11-year-old.
And when Naomi texts, she says the filthiest shit in the world.
Yeah, no, it's horrible. It's just awful. It's just as vulgar as you could imagine.
What's that Ed Meese thing? He's like, I know pornography when I see it. Well, this counts. The
but
way
I
she
was
texts.
Just like, sometimes it's a lot. But no, I think you're right. I think you're right, love it. Especially to use that FOMO. Like, you know, you guys, it's, you know, I'm missing y'all in a Minnesota winter. I can't hear all the Alabama fun. I'll just see y'all next Christmas or whatever it is, you know. And or just like, I'm going to have to get the chat, keep me updated. You know, whatever it is. You wrote it best. Play it back, Hollis. Rewind, play it back. Type it up. Okay?
Yeah. Or you can just say, I'm done with Alabama and everything in that state. See ya.
Yeah. Yeah, adios, you backwoods freaks.
Yeah.
If you need me, I'll be eating a cheese curd and cursing every one of your goddamn names. Enjoy not having a professional sports team.
Yeah.
Catch you on the flip side.
Yeah. Yeah, where's your sports team? Mobile?
Andy didn't even know. He said Mobile. It's like, okay.
I did go into my head and be like, what's a city in Alabama?
Yes, Mobile's a place. Mm-hmm. Mobile.
With no sports team.
John Lovett.
Yeah.
John.
John Lovett.
John.
Yes. John Lovett.
John.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thanks for having me.
How'd you feel taking the journey into your mind?
You know, this was... I don't know when this comes out, and we've obviously not broached. Like, this was a week. I feel like I came to this sesh with my emotions just behind my eyes, but it did lead me to just come in and just sort of lay it all out. I think that I was 30. I think I was at least 40% more open than I would have been if I hadn't done this on a week of a global confrontation. You know,
right.
What I mean? I think that it changed my whole mindset. You know, Let's just tell the truth.
Let's just tell
about how we're feeling sometimes.
We have to. And I think people, I mean, again, it resonated with me. Like, you have no idea.
Yeah, for
sure. And I think it's, so trust me, I know it can feel different than normal, but I'm like, I'm telling you, sis, you have touched lives. You have changed hearts and minds.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, I'm going to tell you.
Hearts and minds.
Well, it was great to see you both. And you know what? Listen, I don't care if your listeners hear this. I want to get dinner with the two of you.
That's legally binding.
That's my dream. That's all I want out of this.
Legally binding.
It's legal. It's of course legally binding. Yeah. You have an option, but it's not my option. That's how this contract works. You get to option the dinner, but if you want it, I gotta go.
Yep. I'm gonna start
cool
a group text with all of us and our lawyer to make sure that it's legally binding.
All right, you guys. See you next week.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.